Hello and welcome everybody to episode 8 of Why Should Your Team Win? Before I get into the episode, I just got a little housekeeping from my Philadelphia Flyers episode. I meant to say Shane Wright, not Sean Wright, and it was Paul Newman that starred in Slapshot, not Robert Redford. And lastly, Drew played in Gatineau, not Hull. So sorry about those mistakes. Anyway, you guys, I'm so excited. I have Jackson coming from DC. Everybody, give it up for Jackson.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you lending your time. Anyway, let's get into it. Tell me, who is your team and how did it get that way?
So my team are the Washington Capitals. I'm a long-suffering Washington Capitals fan. So it's a little bit of an accident, a little bit of happenstance, and a little bit of like almost destiny, I think, how they ended up as my team. So I'm born and raised in Washington, D.C., which, as anybody who's lived in the D.C. area for any amount of time can tell you, is not the norm. Our city has a pretty small standing population at, you know, balloons during the day as people come in and out to work. So I feel like I was always sort of destined to cheer for the DC sports teams, whether or not I actually wanted to. I have a much more positive relationship with the Capitals than I do with some of our other representatives, but still I can't fully abandon them. But in any case, I discovered the Capitals shortly after I discovered hockey. Like a lot of American kids, I discovered hockey through the Disney Mighty Ducks movies.
Oh, nice.
Dude, I loved those movies when I was a kid. The hockey was sort of, from my memories, was not terribly like important reason why I loved them. I liked them as a kid. And then one day, sort of early, like late spring, early summer, I remember being in our basement. I turned the TV on, one of those big like glass front TVs. I just started scrolling the channels, and the local DC sports network at the time was HTS. It was Home Team Sports. I remember that. And I found the Washington Capitals playing the Boston Bruins. This was, I don't remember which game it was, but it was the game that closed out the first round of the playoffs that year. And the Capitals won. I don't remember watching a lot of the game. It must have been like the third period or something when I tuned in, but I was just hooked. And that was like, oh, here's this thing that I saw in these movies, but it's like, it's real, you know, and it was so much better. So from that moment on, I was hooked. And it was just like a couple of weeks later that I must have taken to it, because my dad took me to the closeout game of the next round of the playoffs, and the Capitals were playing the Ottawa Senators. Awesome. I think that was game 6. And it's really just sort of been a love affair since then.
That's awesome.
With the Capitals up and down, of course.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm an Avs fan. So, I've been there. You know, I compared the last few seasons to, you know, because Colorado had early exits the last three years. So that kind of reminded me of the Capitals situation.
Right. Really got the payoff in the end.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me, what was your favorite all-time Cap?
So my favorite Caps player ever is Peter Bondra. Too. I think a lot of that has to do with that he was sort of the offensive star, the goal scorer, when I discovered them. Yeah, I think, you know, for a lot of things, the thing that's cool when we first discover it is what sticks in our minds in such a powerful way. So I always had an affinity towards him when I was younger. And then as I've gotten older, I think I've sort of been able to put his career into a context and appreciated it even more. You know, being as talented of a goal scorer as he was in an era of the league where, you know, they're really were prioritizing defense and the Devils were pioneering the neutral zone trap and all that kind of stuff. I think he's a player whose skill set, when you watch highlights or something like that, doesn't really get appreciated as much. And he's definitely a player who I think history is going to be kind to his reputation as well, when people go back and discover how good he actually was.
Yeah, I was watching some of his highlights and I was like, dang, how do I not know this guy? You know, like, he's kind of unsung or no?
Very much so, I think. Yeah. I personally think, and a lot of my friends who are from the area also think, that it's a crime that the Capitals have not retired his number 12 yet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some internal organizational politics as it relates to those things. I mean, same goes for Olaf Kolzig, our goalie at the time.
Yeah. So do you have a memorable game or a favorite playoff run?
Well, my favorite playoff run is of course 2018, because yeah, that is the only playoff run in my living memory that didn't end in heartbreak.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like by default, that is my favorite one. But my favorite game that I've ever seen from them was, and I forget the year off the top of my head, but it was one of the many years where the Capitals and Penguins ended up in the second round.
Yeah.
And I went to one of their first games of the series that was in D.C., and it was the game where Ovechkin and Crosby each had hat tricks.
Stop it. Yeah. You were there?
I was there. Yeah, nice. Of course, none of us knew what we were signing up for that night, but that was that was definitely the game that sticks in my mind the most. I think so much of it has to do with just the fact that I was there and the energy in the building and everything like that.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things I actually wrote down, because I know a little bit about Capitals, you know, so I just wrote down what I knew, and that's actually one of the things I wrote down, is the game where they traded hat tricks.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty unforgettable.
Yeah, and then also just unforgettable is the goal that Ovechkin scored when he was a rookie, when he gets tied up, falls on his back, scores one-handed.
Yeah, I remember that game. I was not watching that game. I saw that highlight the next day. I could be wrong, but I think they might have been in, I know they were playing the Coyotes, I think they might have been in Phoenix that time, so I think that I would have had to have gone to bed before that happened.
Yeah, Wayne Gretzky was the coach, and you could see him on the bench looking up, just looking like nonplussed, just being like, wow.
Yeah, you know, that's a pretty great one.
Well, I think it's one of my favorite goals. I can watch that over and over again. You know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's one of those sort of all-time highlights. Well, yeah, a lot of a player sort of from that era that I always had a little bit of an emotional attachment to also was Alexander Semin, sort of the gifted Russian goal scorer on the team, who never quite got the same level of publicity, never quite got all the same coverage. And he's not the player that Alex Ovechkin was. He was a much more, you know, one-dimensional player, and he had much more of a ceiling. But he's one of those players who was so much fun to watch. You know, there's players throughout hockey history who, whether or not they, you know, are considered all-time greats, or they've ever been, you know, one of the 10 best players in the league or something like that, are just, they're beautiful to watch, and he was one of those guys.
Yeah,
so, I liken him sort of to a poor man's Pavel Bure from the Canucks in the 90s and the Florida Panthers in the 2000s. Where he was just Pavel Bure, for example, was probably the most spectacular player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Too. And I always got a little bit of that vibe from Alexander Semin. So that's a lot of what made that era of watching Capitals hockey fun for me, is they had a lot of players like that.
Semin, was he Russian?
He was. He wore number 28 for us back in the day. He's the guy who got into the slap fight with Mark Stahl.
Nice.
Everybody likes to make fun of Alexander Semin for that, but Mark Stahl lost that fight. I like to point that out.
Yeah, he lost that bitch fight. Yes. You know, and then another great moment, the save. First, we talked about the goal, but then the save by Holtby.
Yeah.
Again, that playoff run was incredible. I mean, the Capitals were so hungry. You know, like, I just felt it in my bones they were going to win. After they beat the Penguins, that is. I was like, okay, they're going to win this whole thing.
Yeah, I think. But please continue on. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm just stick save. That was amazing. It should have gone in, but the hockey god said no.
I think that is probably the moment watching hockey that I've probably come the closest to having a heart attack.
Yeah.
Because I was convinced that was going in. Like, I saw it going to the net. I knew it was going to go in. I'm like, oh God, we're going to lose the Stanley Cup to an expansion team. Like, only the Washington Capitals would do this.
Yeah.
And hope you got it. You know, the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, and then I have another player to talk about, Tom Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He's kind of known for being a D-bag. What are your thoughts?
Tom Wilson is that classic player who you like him when he's on your team and you hate him when he's not on your team.
Yeah, I get right? that.
He's a less outwardly irritating Sean Avery with, now granted, he has a lot more skill than Sean Avery ever did. I like Wilson because he's on the Caps. The second Tom Wilson's not on the Caps anymore, I own that my opinion will probably change.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his numbers the last couple of years, he has been doing progressively well each season. I just watched the highlights where he ragdolled Panarin.
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah.
I do. I remember that. Wilson is a frustrating player in a lot of ways because a lot of the stuff that he's done to earn his reputation is not necessary for him to do. Wilson is a skilled player. I mean, when he was in juniors, he led his team both in points and in penalty minutes the year that he got drafted when he played in Plymouth. So he clearly has offensive touch. And I think he's got the ability to be a great power forward in the league who plays a hard game. But then he, you know, once or twice a season, he'll just do something that's like you throw your hands up and be like, why did you do that? It's not necessary. It results in increasingly lengthy suspensions because he keeps doing it.
Yeah. And, you know, hockey is such a fast game and you get frustrated or something doesn't go your way. You shouldn't punch someone in the back of the head when they're on the ice, you know, like something like that. I mean, and I'm sure even he was like, what the hell did I do? You know, I feel like a lot of these players that do these, you know, a cheap shot or a stick to the nuts or something like that, they're like, what was I thinking?
I'm sure you know that has to be the case. I mean, hockey is such an emotional game that I think it almost sets you up to do things that you regret immediately afterward.
Yeah.
None of which is to excuse some of the dumber things that Tom Wilson has done or anything like that. But I always think that, you know, it's easy to sort of pile on a player when they do something like that. But it's also important to remember that, you know, in an emotional state, you're essentially brain just completely bypasses any logical decision-making abilities.
Yeah. Well, and plus he's been in the league for 10 years now. So, I mean,
it's got to be pushing that, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember you mentioned he's a player you hate unless he's on your team. You know, that's how I felt about Kadri when he first came to Colorado. I was like, oh, no, we're getting this guy from Toronto, you know. And then he got suspended that 1 year. And then last year he had a career year, and like at the end of the year, every Avs fan was loving Kadri, you know? So I think there's room for growth. I wonder if maybe Tom Wilson can change a bit.
I would like to see that.
Who knows?
Patrice Bergeron is not like a perfect analogy for Tom Wilson because Bergeron's always been a little bit more of like a pest than Wilson has, whereas Wilson's on the ice.
He's got the size too.
You know, sort of, that's his job.
Yeah.
I mean, so I almost wonder if maybe like the best version of Tom Wilson follows Patrice Bergeron's career arc a little bit more like that. But then like that, if you want to back it up to 2018, such a big reason of why the Capitals beat the Penguins that year is the Penguins just got completely incensed at Tom Wilson and spent all of their energy just trying to do everything they could to make his life horrible and completely forgot that they were like, actually playing hockey games.
Yeah.
Right. So like you acknowledge the problems with these players, but then you also acknowledge the things that they did to bring you joy. And it can be a tough push-pull reaction sometimes.
And then another player I want to talk about is Andrei Burakovsky.
Right.
Like I mentioned, I'm an Avs fan and he just won the cup with us. So guy's got two cups now. And obviously we couldn't keep him because of the salary cap and he's now in Seattle. What were your thoughts on him in Seattle or in Washington?
I really enjoyed watching Burakovsky play. He was a guy who every year he was very noticeable improvement on the ice. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me or anything like that, but just watching the games, you could tell that he was getting better.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, in the NHL, goals are expensive and goals are rare. So people who just have a natural gift for scoring goals, you have to keep them around, in my opinion. So I was disappointed to see him go. Same thing with... I don't know why his name is escaping me right now. The young guy who we traded for Anthony Mantha. And I like Anthony Mantha a lot. I think that he's a really good power forward. Oh, it's Jacob Vrena, excuse me.
Okay.
Jacob Vrena, who we traded to Detroit for Anthony Mantha. I like Mantha.
Okay.
He's got a good contract, is a younger player, you know, plays tough in front of the net. I don't know. I would have hesitated to give up a guy with the level of just sort of innate goal scoring ability that Jacob Vrena has. So I lump Vrena and Burakovsky very much into the same category. And maybe from a managerial perspective, they were seen as being redundant players. I can understand that argument, even though I personally don't agree with it.
Yeah, I mean, he was awesome in Colorado. And then last year, he kind of struggled a bit, and struggled meant, you know, he wasn't as good as his first 2 years previous. But then come playoffs, I mean, he did everything he was supposed to. He got these goals that we needed, and I'm just sad to see him go. So
yeah, good luck. I really enjoyed watching him in Colorado this past playoffs. He's one of those guys who, you know, he was on your team. He was always a good player. He brought you some happy memories. So you just sort of want the best for them. That was sad. I was really sad when he got injured.
Yeah. And then I don't really get to talk to Capitals fans very often. So I'm like going through the list of players, but no, sure. Backstrom. So Backstrom just got hip surgery. How do you think his season will pan out?
Man, this is a tough one. Because it's the same hip injury, unless I'm mistaken, that basically ended Ryan Kessler's career. It's the hip resurfacing.
Yeah.
So, and Kessler had a much different game than Backstrom has. But hip injuries are so tough to come back from in professional sports. Yeah. I mean, a hip injury is what took down Bo Jackson. He's probably like the greatest American athlete who's ever lived.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I have a really hard time seeing Backstrom come back and sort of be the player that he was. Now, his game is not terribly reliant on speed or physicality or anything like that. It's much more about positioning and vision. So I would think that given the skill set that he has, his ability to come back from something like that is definitely a possibility that I don't think should be ruled out. But I don't know, in a professional sport, if you just lose too many steps like that, you are going to get left behind.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, I've heard that hip surgery is one of the hardest to come back from. Brad Marchand with the Boston Bruins, he just got double hip surgery. So we'll see how he bounces back too.
Yeah, you get surgery on, you know, one half of your hip, it's bad enough. You get on two.
Yeah.
But Backstrom, he's been one of those guys, like from the moment he got into the NHL and with the Capitals, he's just sort of like this quiet guy, showed up and did his job so well every day. Yeah, is Alex Ovechkin probably the best naturally gifted goal scorer in the history of the game? Yeah, probably. But he wouldn't score nearly as many goals as he had if Nick Backstrom wasn't on the ice with him. Mm-hmm. And Backstrom, if I'm correct in saying, has only had one All-Star appearance, which is just that's ludicrous. Like, you can't tell me that every year of his career he hasn't been one of the like seven or eight best centers in the NHL. He's quiet, you know, so he's not a guy that necessarily comes to people's minds. I think that both now and into the future, Nick Backstrom is going to be a guy who has a place in a lot of Capitals fans' hearts.
Mm-hmm. Well, he just renegotiated, right, a few years ago for an 8-year extension or something like that. So I think he's got a lot of years left on his contract. So hopefully he bounces back.
Yeah, and in professional sports, there's always a way to wave a magic wand to make the money disappear. But exactly, I know that the plan was for him to come back this year. I don't see that happening.
Oh, yeah. Well, take your time, buddy.
Yeah, please take your time with that injury.
Yeah. Well, and I guess it wouldn't be a Caps episode if we didn't discuss the Great Eight.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Man. Please go ahead.
No. Well, how did you feel when he rose the cup over his head and went, yeah?
Probably the best moment of my hockey watching life, for sure. Yeah. And so much of it had to do with that. And I'm sure a lot of Caps fans will identify with me saying this. It was a thing that I had just sort of convinced myself was never going to happen.
You know, really?
We'd come so close so many times, and this core wasn't getting any younger, and just one of those things like, you know what, this is not going to happen. So then when it did, it was one of those things that words can't really describe, especially because I've been watching the team since I was a kid. You know, they've been a part of my life for such a long time at that point.
Yeah. How did DC celebrate? What was that parade like?
DC went nuts.
Yeah.
Went absolutely nuts. That night, there were celebrations in front of the then Verizon Center, where the game was also being watched. And then the parade shut down a pretty significant portion of the city. But that was one of the times that no one was really complaining about that.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Ovi was drunk for a month.
Oh, yeah. Him and the entire team were. I mean, they were just like taking the cup to fountains in the city and just like drinking in them, and it was great. Everyone was loving it.
Well, another one of my favorite players is TJ Oshie. He actually I went to University of North Dakota, and mm-hmm. I got to watch him play when he was for the Fighting Sioux, now with the Fighting Hawks. So I got to watch him play a lot, and he was always a fan favorite, and I've always kind of followed his career in St. Louis, and then when he got, you know, switched over to the Capitals, so that's kind of why I was followed the Caps, because I've always been an Oshie fan. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite memories of that cup run is when Oshie lifts the cup and then shows his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad, you know, unfortunately passed away a few months ago, or maybe a year or two ago, to complications of Alzheimer's or dementia or something like that.
Yeah, so. I believe his father had Alzheimer's. I remember Oshie talking to the I forget who the on-ice reporter was then, but talking about how his dad didn't really remember a lot of things anymore, but how he was confident that he'd remember this one. That was a moment that really sort of stuck with a lot of people. Oshie is probably my favorite current player on the Capitals right now. Yeah. I adore TJ Oshie. He's one of the only players on the team who actually showed up in this year's playoff debacle against the Panthers. He was
you guys almost upset series. Them for sure.
Yeah, we were closer than I think a lot of people thought we were going to get to. I thought the Panthers were just going to like roll over us. They went to six. Yeah. And really, I think that we gave that series away.
Well, yeah, because I mean, Florida was kind of a powerhouse. You know, the midseason acquisition of Giroux, you know, just kind of getting their team ready. I actually had them for my pick in my bracket, Avs versus Florida.
It's not a bad pick. It's
like, yeah. Really, yeah. But I actually, and then even more embarrassing, I did pick Toronto over Tampa Bay, even though I knew in my heart Tampa was going to win. So,
yeah, that was one of those things. Like when the matchups were all set and Toronto had Tampa, it was just like, oh, God, these poor people have to do this again.
I know. God. And who knows if, God, they have a very real chance of that happening again next year.
They do. I know that's such a tough division for them to be in. Yeah. I want it for Toronto so badly because their fan base is so long suffering, and as a Capitals fan, I very much identify with that. So I want them to have their feelings that I had in 2018.
Let's see.
Yeah. But to bring it back to TJ Oshie for a moment, I would say he's probably my favorite current player on the Capitals. He's just sort of he's this consummate professional too. He always shows up, even when some of the guys on the teams who have bigger names maybe don't show up, you know, come mm-hmm. playoff time. You can always rely on him for something like that. His game has aged very well as he's gotten older too, which I don't know if a lot of people really thought that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And even in St. Louis, he was a player I enjoyed watching on the times that I would watch Blues games, so they would be on national broadcast. But like so many people, I really got to know him during the Olympics when he was on the USA teams. Yeah, yeah, he just had those unbelievable shootouts.
Yeah, that was amazing. I remember watching that at home and just being so happy for him. And you know, USA, USA, you know, right. But sadly, I think Canada won that year, probably. I don't know. That's just a guess.
I'm sure they did. I think in Sochi, did Canada win? I think it was either Canada or Sweden that won in Sochi, but I have to look it up.
I want to throw like Finland in the mix there.
Yeah, it's totally possible. It's an interesting piece of trivia. I think that Finland has more international medals than like any other hockey nation or something like that. The Finns are crazy consistent in international play.
Yeah, I think Finland's been on the rise the last couple of years. You know, we got Laine, who's meh, but then we got Rantanen, who's an Av, you know, and who else is a Finn?
Well, the Finnish also, they always have a great goalie. Too. Like whether or not North Americans really know who they are, they're playing over in like the SM Liga or anything like that, they always have great goalies. It goes back to like Mika Kiprusoff and beyond. They always have good goalies.
Yeah. I have a random question. What's up with Oshie's yellow laces? He's been wearing them his whole career. Is there a reason for that, or is it like a throwback to something?
Not that I'm particularly aware of or anything like that. I mean, I know that both hockey players and professional athletes writ large get these insane superstitions or something, or things like that. So I would imagine that's what to attribute it to. That maybe one day, like, you busted a lace or something like that and threw a yellow one on because it's what he had and had a great game or something like that. And I imagine it just stuck from there.
Okay, yeah, because I think, yeah, he's been wearing them his whole career. So I was like, I should get yellow laces.
Exactly. I mean, I can, a lot of kids playing hockey in the DC area started switching to yellow laces for a long period of time.
So, great eight, Alexander Ovechkin. Is he going to catch Gretzky? Break the goals record? I mean, we all want to say yes. We want to, right? Like, but realistically, he's my age.
Realistically, I have a hard time seeing it. I do. I mean, people talk about, what is it, like, it's right around like 115 goals right now or something like that. That's a lot of goals. That's
I think
two seasons plus of him being at the same production that he is now.
Well, yeah, he got 50 last year. I mean, wow, that's pretty good. But they're saying if he, for the next 5 years, I think he has 5 years, he's playing till he's 39 or 40 is when his contract ends.
Yeah, that's when the extension ends.
So basically he has to do at least 30 a year for the next 5 years.
Right, which, you know what, given the fact that, you know, he's been able to maintain the level of goal scoring consistency that he has for as long as he has, that is totally possible. I think just across professional sports is one thing that you see is when people fall off, they fall off quickly.
Yeah. Well, and he's done a pretty good job of not getting hurt. I mean, each season he'll miss a handful of games. So I think that's another, he's built different. You know, he just is a monster, machine man.
Yeah. So that could certainly be a contributing factor as to why he would do it too. I think if anything, if he does it at this point, the reason is going to be health and, you know, maintaining at least a certain level of consistency. And it would rely on him having a somewhat of a more like gentle fall off than that just fall off a cliff that you see with so many people.
Yeah. Here's another just random, but a memory that sticks out of my mind is when Andrei Svechnikov of the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, he fought Ovechkin and Ovechkin looks at him and goes, "Are you sure?" And then just
and knocked him out, basically.
I mean, it was like insta brain damage. I mean, I think he, when he fell on the ice, he did that like posturing things that we saw last week with that football player. Not as bad as that football player. Yeah, not as severe. I mean, he did get up and skate with the help of two other people. He got off the ice and he didn't play that next game.
No, but, I mean, that was just an ugly incident for everyone involved.
Yeah, 19 years old, and he had the stones to try to fight the great eight. You know, it's like, I give him that,
You certainly respect him for having the courage to do something like that, too, particularly in a moment where, you know, to bring it back to what we were talking about with Tom Wilson, you're in a very emotional state. So maybe you're not necessarily thinking this through, but he clearly had the courage to follow through. So, you know, good for him.
Supposedly, I don't know if this is true or if I'm misremembering, but I think Ovi actually said, like, "Are you sure?"
I don't have before a specific memory of that, but I remember hearing things to that effect sort of like floating around a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's because he was another young Russian player. And I would imagine that, you know, he grew up watching Alex Ovechkin, and then Ovi probably like has a lot of respect for him because he's a young, skilled Russian player. It's like that. So it's like, look, man, we can do this if you want to, but I'm going to give you like a chance to, I'm going to give you a chance to not.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the elephant in the room with Ovechkin right now is what's happening in Europe and the Ukraine war, that Putin's war, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think that any discussion of Alexander Ovechkin, I don't think it's appropriate to leave that out. So I think it's something that's worth discussing, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, like I said, I've been following Ovi's career my whole life, and well, his whole career, whatever. And you know, I always favored him over Crosby and this and that. But when his news conference came out like 7 months ago, and the reporters are like, "What do you think about, you know, Putin's war?" Essentially, and he just gave a quip or a soundbite, "Please, no more war," and he kind of left it at that.
Yeah, that's a very. That was a disappointing thing to see, for sure. That's such a good mealy mouth response to, and you know, the subtext, of course, being, "Oh, I just want peace. I want no more war." Okay, well, then what you're asking the Ukrainians to do is just give up and give their home away. That's not an acceptable solution. And it's tough because of Alex Ovechkin's well-known and very public closeness to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, that's something that, like, look, the receipts are there, right? This is not the rumor, this is not speculation. This is just the truth. And sure, I certainly respect the argument when people say, oh, it's easy for us in the West and in, you know, Western Europe to criticize because, you know, we're removed from it, but his family is still in the thick of it. Well, the Ovechkin family are Russian sports royalty.
Exactly.
Right. And just given given their close proximity to Vladimir Putin, I have a pretty difficult time seeing them not at least be aligned on things that are, you know, important in that context.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
No, I'm sure when Putin and Ovi hang out, they're not talking politics. I mean, I'm sure Ovi's like, yes, you are a better hockey player than me, you know, or whatever Putin wants to hear.
Sure. I mean, there's always, in any dictatorial system, you're going to have to, or the people underneath have to do what it takes to massage the dictator's ego or else.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Putin play hockey?
Yeah, he's not great.
Well, funny. It's like, people are just, they're like decoys on the ice and they just let Putin like skate around. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's like watching Kim Jong-un play golf or basketball or something like that.
Exactly, exactly. But you know,
the whole thing is really disappointing. It's pretty disillusioning too. You know, I think a lot of people are become very tempted to try to separate politics and sports, right? And there's a part of me that understands why you'd want to do that, because sports are your entertainment and you don't want to color them with what's going on in the world. But there also come times when the events of the world are simply too serious for you to even make that argument. And I think that this is very much one of them. And I look at Alex Ovechkin in a much more complicated way than I ever have too. Right. And, you know, if we're going to be fair here, I probably should have started doing that after 2014, but I didn't. So I guess I'm trying to make up for lost time almost, where look, two things can be true at once. He can be a person who's had a, you know, been a presence in your life and has been responsible for bringing you a lot of joy, and can also be someone who at the very least is not actively working against, you know, one of the most abhorrent things going on in the world right now. And that is going to color his legacy. It is, and it should.
Yeah, because, you know, we put athletes on a pedestal, or, you know, kind of like a hero worship. You know, we look at athletes with, you know, rose-colored glasses. You know, we want them to be on the right side of history. And when they don't do the right thing, which is denounce a murderous dictator, I know it's not black and white, but it's just, I understand that feeling of being let down, you know, like, and then, for but sure. Is, you know, and then also the Washington Capitals have a responsibility to like nudge Ovechkin. I mean, he still has that profile picture of him and Putin. I mean, that's been like that for the last 7 months.
The Capitals organization is not queen in this by any stretch. Now I've heard some like conflicting reports. It was some people claim the Capitals went to him and told him to change his picture and he said no. Other people have refuted that claim, so I don't know what's true in that sense. I wasn't in the room when that happened, but I think the Capitals need to do the right thing and essentially put pressure on him, but significant pressure on him to do the right thing here.
Well, I mean, he's a god in DC.
He is.
And, you know, money talks. So, and, you know,
that's what it always comes down to.
Well, and out of the 55 Russian players currently in the league, how many have spoken out? Zadorov, currently with the Calgary Flames, he made a statement condemning the war. But like I said, I mean, it's perspective. Like, here we have freedom of speech, or we don't have to worry about like secret police taking us away if they You know what I mean? We don't have to worry about those kind of things that they do in Russia. Like if we were having this conversation at the Red Square in front of the Kremlin, like we would just be taken. You know what I mean?
So right. That's a good and thing. I'm totally sympathetic to that side of the argument too. I just think that when you have tens of thousands of everyday Russian citizens who don't have the means that somebody like Alexander Ovechkin has out in the streets protesting and risking so much more than he would be risking, it's a little hard for me to be sympathetic.
Yeah, because like Artemi Panarin, the New York Rangers, we all know Panarin. He's an awesome player, fun to watch. He kind of he spoke out against Putin, and then he had these false allegations of assaults and like bribery, and he had to go into hiding for a while till that was. Mm-hmm. So it's very real of what can happen to you.
It is very real. And that's, I think that is one of the things that maybe makes, I think that's one of the contributing factors to my feelings being as complicated as they are sometimes, that I know that it's not black and white. But at the same time, I don't know, this is just one of those sort of watershed moments in history where just the difference between right and wrong needs to be acknowledged. Yeah. And you want the people in your life who you admire to be able to do those sorts of things. Whether or not it's fair is almost beside the point.
Yeah. Well, enough of that asshole Putin.
Enough of him.
Enough of him. Ovi, do the right thing. We love you, pal. Hope you break that record.
I wanted to do it. I really do.
So let's just segue into my next question. Who's a team you hate to lose against? Is it the obvious answer?
You know, it for a long time, it was the obvious answer. It's not anymore. I think so much of that has to do with that the Capitals and the Penguins are on such similar trajectories, is that they are teams that have been excellent for a long time and are sort of on they're sort of in the sunset of their current eras, right? Their stars are aging. Their young cores are not what the young cores of some years ago were. So I think they're on very similar trajectories. So it's almost like it's like two sort of old like warriors like looking back on their time fighting each other or something like that. So whenever we play the Penguins, I always want us to win, and I certainly don't like it when Sidney Crosby scores against us. But I don't have nearly the negative feelings that I did toward the Pittsburgh Penguins at one point. Part of that too is that I went to college in Pittsburgh. I went to University of Pittsburgh, and so many of my friends are Penguins fans and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's more to the point where I think we just enjoy sort of making fun of each other, and there's not nearly the intensity behind those feelings that there once were. I think the team that I hate to lose the most against is the Philadelphia Flyers.
Ooh.
And that is purely because DC and Philadelphia's geographic proximity to one another leads to a certain natural rivalry. So I don't like any of the Philly sports teams at all.
Yeah.
Never have, never will. Like Andre Iguodala when he played for the 76ers, but that was about it.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about Philly beating you this season, that's for sure.
No, it looked for a second like Philly was going the right direction, and then they about faced on that one pretty quickly.
Yeah,
I hate to lose to the Flyers. Hate to lose to the Lightning.
Ooh, yeah.
And so much of that is that, at least for the modern iteration of the Tampa Bay Lightning, I am just tired of them. You're great. You've been great. Good job. Let's let somebody else be great. That's why I was so happy to see Colorado win this year. I didn't want a third one.
I wish we would have won in game 5 at the hometown crowd, but when we won it in game 6, I think when Lehkonen scored the go-ahead goal and Pat Maroon just slashed him as hard as he could, like after it was clear a goal and the horn went off, it's just like and then Stamkos pushed a ref. I mean,
exactly.
Come on, like lose with class, buddy. You know, like
those sorts of things leave a pretty bad taste in your mouth. And also, like, part of the reason why I don't like losing to Tampa as well is because I have so many memories of the old Southeast division of Tampa just being awful for years and years and years. Right. So it's almost like when Tampa, now that they're good and they're consistently good and they have been as consistently good as they have been for as long as they have been, it's almost like little brother is like jumping up and is now beating you up, which is not a great feeling.
Yeah. Well, so I have another question. This is the new question I'm asking on the pod. So is there a goal that you remembered that just absolutely smashed your soul? So example I'll give, it was University of North Dakota versus U of M in the playoffs in 2014, and U of M scored at the buzzer. I thought we were going to go in overtime, but we lost with like 0.1 seconds to go. And it was just, I remember taking my glasses off, shutting the lights off, and just like sitting on my bed in the dark for like 15 minutes. I was like, nobody talked to me. Yeah. Do you have something like that?
I do, yes. And I don't remember who scored the goal, but this would have been in, it was the first year that the Capitals, with like their very young core, like young Alex Ovechkin, young Nick Backstrom, Mike Green, all those guys. It was the first year of that core that we made the playoffs, right? It was when Sergei Fedorov was on the team, like old, the elder statesman Sergei Fedorov. And we had like Donald Brashear and all of those guys. And we played the Flyers in the first round. Of course, played the Flyers in the first round. And the Flyers scored an overtime series winner after what was very clearly like a goalie interference call, or what should have been goalie interference. Mm-hmm. I think our goalie at the time was Cristobal Huey, like that. The Flyers basically knocked him out of the net and scored in overtime, if my memory serves. That would be pretty close to that one. Also, it could have been, now that with the years removed, that I've always built it up being as bad as it was in my, like, even worse than it was in my mind.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in a lot of the series, we ended up losing to the Penguins. Basically, any goal the Penguins scored became soul crushing, because it was just like you had this such a raw trauma that you would go into the series like prepared to lose.
Well, and there were so many Game Sevens in the last decade for you guys. So many Game Sevens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and of course, we never showed up in the Game Sevens, too. It's like they would score the first goal of the game, like, oh, God, here we go.
Well, and that's when, you know, Cousy won it in overtime Game 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys won it in Game 6 to finally.
Oh, yeah, I think if we had gone to a Game 7, I might not have been able to watch that game.
Yeah.
It would have been too much. That was from the opposite. That was, like, such an invigorating goal when he scored that, too, because it was, like, it felt like you were removing such a weight.
Yeah. Like, and he did like
history
the
eagle. Of losing to it the was Penguins. Great. Yeah, yeah, that was great. That was, if anything, like if I had to point to one moment of that playoff run that really like resonates to me, it was probably that one, honestly.
Yeah.
Like once we beat the Penguins, like, you know what? All right.
Yeah, no, I remember watching that game. I don't remember what time of day it was because, you know, I'm several hours ahead, you know. Mm-hmm. But just being, it could feel the weight lifting, but also just being so happy for the Capitals fans.
Yeah, that was a great memory for sure.
Okay, well, so let me go into my last question in the name of the show. Why should your team win this upcoming Stanley Cup season?
Why should we win? Oh, man. I think I have to answer that question a couple of different ways.
Hope beyond hope, yeah.
Hope beyond hope. Why should we win? We should win because I want us to win.
Yeah.
I would be very happy if we did. Will we win? No. Where the Capitals are not going to win the Stanley Cup this year. I think the Capitals are going to make the playoffs this year. I think the Capitals are going to be good this year. I think the Capitals will be better than they were last year because we're going to have better goaltending.
Okay.
I just think that the way that you win modern hockey, so much of it has to do with being fast. Right. Mm-hmm. Colorado is so fast. Edmonton is so fast. And the Capitals are old. They're, if not the oldest team in the league, they're one of the, you know, three or four.
Everyone's getting
teams
up there.
You know, and there's young players in the pipeline. There's good young players in the pipeline, but they're not there yet. And the Capitals are slow.
Yeah.
They're old and they're slow.
Do you know anything about your first round number 20 pick, Ivan Miroshenko?
I really don't know anything about all that much about him. I remember an interview with him on draft night where he was talking about how he was so excited to be drafted by the team that, you know, Alex Ovechkin played for and all that.
Yeah.
But like where it comes to like paying attention to the NHL draft, like sure, I pay attention, but the Capitals have had picks in the 20s for such a long time right now that you're not going to see them for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So I more start paying attention to those guys later, like once they get into the system, once they start working their ways up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I put them on hold. I remember when we drafted Connor McMichael and everybody's like, hey, this player, he's really good. He's going to be a thing. It's going to be a little while. So, and I remember thinking, oh, that's great. We got a good young prospect here. We need those right now. Mm-hmm. And now that he's worked his way into the league, I've started paying more attention. I want to see him take a big leap this year because we're at a sort of a moment in the team's development where we need to really hand things over to the younger generation of players, but our younger generation of players haven't been good enough to take the mantle from the older players.
Yeah. Who do you have in net now? You said you're goaltending him.
Darcy Kemper.
Oh, Darcy. Duh, I should have known that.
Yeah. And I like Darcy Kemper. Darcy Kemper was awesome in the regular season. He gave up too many softies in the playoffs for me to feel entirely comfortable with the amount of money that we gave him. But our goaltending was so bad last year that there's no way that it's not a substantial improvement.
Well, yeah, I mean, Darcy Kemper also had Cale Makar and Devon Taves playing in front of him. So that was a big help. And our tandem with Pavel Francouz, mm-hmm. he's amazing backup. He had an amazing run in the playoffs too. Because Kemper, he had that eye, stick in the eye.
Exactly. So that's one of the reasons why maybe I had a little bit more optimistic is that, oh yeah, sure, he gave up a lot of softies in the playoffs, but he was recovering from an eye injury. So yeah, it's distinctly possible that he just couldn't see some of these things.
Yeah, and he's huge. I think all goalies are huge now. They're all like 6'6", you know. It's crazy.
This taking up space in net is is so critical. So I think Kemper is going to be a good goalie for us. I really do. And
well, yeah.
Yes. Ever since Braden Holtby's career started to take a bit of a nosedive, just the level of play between the pipes just hasn't been at a championship caliber. And that really, really came home to roost last year, where it was just the goaltending was bad.
Yeah. Well, how did you feel when they got rid of Holtby? Like, I always hate it. It happened to us. We just won with Kemper and we got rid of him. You guys won with Holtby and then you got rid of him. Like, how did you feel about that?
I hated to see Holtby go. He was such like a wonderful figure to have on a team. I mean, you talk about somebody who is both a great player. He's is an awesome person and is also willing to put himself out there where like social issues are concerned. Like one of the leading voices in the NHL on LGBTQ rights, right? Mm-hmm. One of those, he's awesome. Fantastic and all that. So DC loved him. DC adored him.
Yeah.
I was sad to see him go. I've seen it so many times in the NHL where, you know, a goalie is great 1 second and they're not great the next second. Goalies fall off harder than any position in the NHL and they fall off faster. And that's what has happened. I feel it's not a good feeling because injuries are really taking him down. And here's a guy who's the best Capitals goalie in my memory and is an awesome dude too.
Yeah. Well, Jackson, that's all I got for you. Thank you so much for blessing me with your Capitals knowledge and being able to nerd out. It was so great to talk with you.
Of course. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time. I had a good time.
All right. Talk to you later.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.